Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Hello, and welcome to Notes of the North Talks, a series where we get to know our local Canadian musical talent. Today, I'm here with composer Kevin Lau. Thank you so much, Kevin, for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
First things first, where are you joining us from today? Where in Canada do you call home?
So my wife and I moved to Ottawa about a year and a half ago. I am living in Ottawa. I have been stationed in Toronto for a couple months now, just because my son is at St. Kitts Hospital. And so the place that you're seeing in my background is the lovely Ronald McDonald House, which is a beautiful, beautiful place that is very home-like and has a lot of amenities. Yeah, makes us just feel very, very comfortable as we go through this experience.
Awesome. Tell us about how your love for music began. At what moment did you realize you wanted to become a composer?
I studied piano when I was younger. And like a lot of kids who started on the piano, I think, you know, you start young and you don't really know why you're doing it. And then one day you start developing memories and you're like, oh, I've been doing this for a long time. And I always enjoyed playing piano. It was something that was very close to my heart. But I think my love of music really kicked into high gear when I was in high school, around the age of 15 or 16, which is when I there wasn't really like a sharp transition, but I remember trying to move away from the conservatory curriculum stuff that I was practicing on the piano and just playing things that I was listening to and imitating the music that I was hearing. And then out of the transcribing to imitation to kind of like making things up, it gradually became composing, right? And so the moment I started to do that, it sounds cliche, but it really was sort of a light switch going on where I started to realize that I could compose for hours and hours on end in a single day and feel like no time had passed. You know, I'd often look at the clock and be like, how is it, you know, 10 o'clock at night now and I'm still doing this. So it was just something I loved doing, and it compelled me to pursue a degree in music composition. And so I went to the University of Toronto for music.
That's amazing. Could you walk us through your process when you start a new composition? Do you have any rituals that help you get into the flow?
Yeah, I mean, like the process is honestly, it's one of my favorite parts about composing. It's something that I really hold very dearly to me, because I think that partaking in the creative process is part of the joy of making music, right? It's not necessarily only about the outcome or the effect that it has, but it is about that creation. And so I put a lot of thought into how I do it, but to be honest, it's also kind of evolved a lot over time. So when I was younger, I would when I'm composing, I would work out ideas on the piano, and just they'd be fragments, and I would sketch them, and I would eventually put them on the computer and start to assemble these ideas into a score through Sibelius, which is the program I'm still using now. And as I composed more and more, and I started to develop my professional practice, it solidified a little bit into kind of like a two-part process, where the first part I call sort of like the daydreaming sketching phase, which is awesome, and I hope that never goes away, because it's my favorite part. And this is the phase where no matter what project I'm working on, I will spend hours in a day just with a blank sheet of paper. It could be staff papers, but sometimes it's not even staff paper, because I don't always have staff paper on me. It might be a notebook, it might be a blank piece of paper, and I'll have a pencil, and I'll have a book, and preferably some coffee. And often I won't be in my house because I do find that, especially now, the house offers maybe a few too many distractions. If I'm on the computer, I'm online, you know. So I'll try to go into like just a coffee place that has no music or the library or something, and just enter into that state of sort of open, relaxed openness, and think about the project and maybe sketch a little bit and just work it from it from that angle. And if nothing, if by the end of the day I end up with music that I don't end up using, that's totally fine. Sometimes I'll go with the purpose of sketching and I'll read a book instead because I'm just not in the mood. And all of that is fine. If I can build in the time to do that, then I'm very happy. Once I've gotten to a certain point, or realistically, when the deadline starts to get really close and I'm like, no, you know what, you need to stop playing around now. Then I will go into Sibelius, which is kind of like my version of a music word processor, and write the thing. And then it's a little, it's a little bit like an author going from their sketch phase into putting out the paragraphs. Mm-hmm. And that can be a little bit more of a tricky process sometimes because it's refinement. It's you're pushing against things that you're doing that you may not be entirely satisfied with. There's a lot of editing, composing, but eventually the piece does come out, and then we start the whole thing again.
Wow, that's so cool! Can you share with us one of your compositions that you're super proud of at the moment?
I would say, from a first instinct standpoint, I'm going to name "Under a Veil of Stars," which is a piece for violin, cello, piano trio, and it's on an album that was released last year called "Under a Veil of Stars," that features my chamber music played by the Scott St. John, Rachel Mercer, and Angela Park. So it's the Mercer Park St. John trio. And it's a piece that's very dear to my heart for many reasons. I mean, both of my pieces are dear to my heart, but this one in particular, I think, in some ways represents and embodies what I love most about music and what I think it can also do for people. It was written in part in response to the unexpected passing of Rachel Mercer's spouse, Johannes Schönberg, who is a towering figure in the violin community. And I wanted to write a piece that would honor his memory. I also wanted to write a piece that was about the journey of life and death and seeing the world through a childlike lens, and just all of the things that are just so important to me. It's kind of like a kitchen sink of a piece in some ways, but one which was designed really to provide a sense of solace and a sense of healing for this particular individual, but also just anyone who is going through some kind of hardship, some kind of difficult time, which, you know, we all kind of are in different ways. So I would say Under a Veil of Stars. It's a big piece as well. It's three movements. It's almost half an hour long. So it was an opportunity to kind of explore those themes on a really epic scale, I think.
That's so beautiful. And music really does have that touching element. And that's one of the reasons why I love it so much. Having worked in so many different musical genres, orchestral music, ballet, opera, film, do you find your approach to composition changes depending on the medium? Or is it a consistent process?
Yeah, I mean, it's there are some commonalities across all of those genres in terms of the process, which I had talked about a little bit. But different genres of music also have, they demand different rigors, different disciplines. And so, for example, if you're working in ballet, there's a little bit more consideration paid to musical elements of rhythm and tempo, just because, not only because rhythm and tempo are kind of at the foundation, at the core of a dancer's body movements, and we're talking about the pairing of sound and movement fundamentally, but also because over the course of a ballet, which can be quite, in my case, all the projects I've worked on were over half an hour long, so they happen to be really, really big pieces, and when you're working on a really big time canvas like that, how the music moves through time, it becomes really, really important. So if you are doing all of this wonderful stuff, but then you're not paying attention to, say, something like tempo, then on some level, you know, 15 minutes will go by and you're going to be like, this has been, this feels kind of not this way. And so just realizing that there's a there's an axis of variation there that needs to be really paid attention to. I think that's important. The other big thing I wanted to mention with switching mediums is the level of collaboration that's involved. And so if you're working solo, like an orchestral piece, it's kind of like having an artist being commissioned to create their painting, right? Like it's their voice is expressed entirely through the painting. The commissioner is likely asking for the artist to be themselves, and that's the whole point of it. Whereas if it's on the other end of things, if you're doing film and you're writing music for film, it's a little bit more like musical graphic design, where the person who is making the film or the studio or the director, it's their baby, it's their vision. And so your job as a composer is to tell that story musically, but not exactly according to your own terms. It's going to be according to their terms. And you're doing the best job that you can to fulfill someone's vision. And so that demands a very, very different lens, I think, a very different sensibility, because then you're working with your own instincts, but also like, how can I tell this story in the best way I can while also honoring the vision of other people? And in the case of film, I mean, yeah, you don't even think about the structure because it's given to you. The film is there. You're working on a scene to scene basis. So yeah, very different sometimes from medium to medium.
Going off of collaboration now, if you could collaborate with any artist from any time in history on any project, no restrictions, who would they be and why?
Probably John Williams. I'm trying not to think too hard about that and just kind of let my instinct go. And I realize he's still alive too. John Williams, film composer, 92 years old, still writing music. Represents so much of what I admire about both music and the people doing it. He has kind of a humility and a generosity of spirit that I really admire. And that's nothing to say about just the music itself, which is so great. I don't know if I really want to collaborate with him so much as just watch him work and maybe just be a fly on the wall and maybe orchestrate one of his things. I don't know.
I wholeheartedly agree. Your music explores this idea of deep connections amidst surface diversity. Can you talk a little bit about this idea and how it's translated into sound?
So this idea of surface diversity for me came when I was a student, and I had this thing that I discovered was odd, but I didn't think it was odd at the time when I was writing it, where, when I would write music, a lot of my influences, I would sort of wear them on my sleeve quite explicitly. And so when you're a teenager, you have a lot of musical influences. And for me, I was drawn to classical music, I was drawn to contemporary music, but also jazz and minimalism and progressive rock and progressive metal and film music, like just so many things that I love doing. And you try to create your own music, and invariably these influences kind of trickle into your music, right? And I noticed in my early years that my mentors would kind of look at that and say, well, these things don't really go together, right? Because there's like a coherence that you have to adhere to. There was this... The premise in a lot of my pedagogy was on belonging and coherence, but practically that ended up seeming to me as if I had to pick one of those things and stick with it. And somehow I like my whole body kind of rebelled at doing that. Like I really, for me, it was important actually that that I write the kind of music that I wanted to write, which had these sort of contradictory, diverse inspiration behind it. And so a lot of my practice has been trying to figure out a way of doing that in a way that was, that would create a kind of sense that these very disparate styles could not only belong in the same space, but would seem inevitable almost. Like, you know, you'd get into this really, really tense kind of contemporary texture that would all of a sudden explode into like a Baroque fugue or something like that. But it would, if you did it properly and with the right intention and craft, it would feel like it could go no other way. And that was really, really exciting to me. Rather than trying to say, okay, I have to stick to one or the other or just make my own path, I was like, well, they exist in my imagination, so they must be able to exist on the page somehow. Like, if I can hear it in my head, there must be a way of making a compelling musical argument for this. I just have to try really hard. I think so much of particularly modern music in the 20th century, because of this explosion of just what we now know, there's so many kinds of music out there, and they're so great. But for the creator that's kind of coming in into their own at this time, it can be confusing. And it's like, how do I make sense of all of this? How am I inspired and influenced by all these things and then trying to chart my own path? And one of the ways I discovered was that there is a way of linking these two things. So there's kind of a deeper layer where if you can flow from one thing to another, then they belong. And so a huge part of my creativity is about flow and trying to find means of moving from one place to another that you weren't normally put together. And ultimately, the reason why I like this idea of finding deeper connections amidst this sort of surface diversity is because I think it's a metaphor as well for other kinds of diversity, right? When you put things that are unlike one another on the surface, it can be a challenge for them to belong. And so you have to find ways of connecting those things and not simply rest at the fact that these are just different. So, yeah.
An absolutely wonderfully beautiful explanation. In any of your current projects, are there themes that are really significant that are showing up?
Yeah, I mean, I've... I think the theme of healing is probably, you know, forefront in my mind right now. And it's an unusual, I guess it's an unusual perspective to come from, because the idea of music healing is anachronistic in a way, but it's also been with us for a long time. And it's also very hard to explain. And I think that we often like to, you know, if we can't explain it, then in some ways it's maybe there's something a little bit mysterious about it, and we don't like to talk about it. But I do think that my experience, at least with music, and I suspect yours as well, and many people's, is that there is something very cathartic about a deep experience of music. And no matter what that music is, because it's sort of different for each person. So I think that for me, that's been kind of a guiding principle for me, whether it's super on the conscious level or a little bit less conscious, where, you know, I'm not necessarily directing my goal towards healing, but as I'm writing this piece, I'm thinking about all of the ways in which this can have a sort of effect. And it can allow us to make sense of a journey that would otherwise be very difficult to make sense of. And music being something that has a coherence to it, even though it's just sound waves, really, right? Like, it's just frequencies, and they're put together in a certain way. The fact that you can have a particular order of things that allows you to see the world in an entirely different way, or to move you to tears beyond what language can even provide. I think that's miraculous, and I think that's something that is exciting and moving and meaningful for me. And so that's a very lofty way of saying, like, that kind of healing is something that I'm interested in.
That's so moving. That's beautiful. Transitioning over to Canada a little bit. So if you could describe the Canadian composition style in, say, 3 words, what would they be?
That's a very hard question. 3 words. Oh, gosh.
First 3 words that come to mind.
Open, attentive, and meaningful.
Could you talk a little bit more about these choices?
Well, I think open is a really interesting word because it works on a few levels. It describes the Canadian experience, you know, on multiple levels, for one thing. There's certainly a geographical and geological and you know, just if you think of the open expanse of the country, how much of it is uninhabited, how much of it is wild, in that word as well is interesting. You know, I might in fact substitute it is meaningful, but there's something exclusive about meaningful. I like the word wild, though. I like the word wild to describe it, open and wild. And so I think because that relates to my sense of what Canada is, I think it can't help but be part of the makeup of the people here. And so it might translate into their creativity as well. And, you know, there's many kinds of openness. Right? There is this sort of psychological openness of being open to new experience and open to transformation. And I think that characterizes Canada as well. I mean, maybe a particularly ideal version of it. But, you know, you were asking me a broad question. So I think I'm ascribing something that is both real and ideal at the same time. So I would say that's for open. And wild goes along with that a little bit. Wild. I had a colleague of mine who is embarking on a project called The Wild Places. And it was particularly interesting because we discovered that the word has a lot of places to, like a lot of associations that are kind of very interesting. And you know, just even deconstructing the idea of what that means in relation to human society, for example, a very interesting word to attribute. But I would say that there is a kind of wildness and a kind of risk as well to creativity in Canada. It's hard to speak of it. To kind of circle back to my thoughts on the question of Canadian music. I've always found this question really tricky because I it's not as though that there isn't an answer, but it's hard to make that leap because for me, I've always thought of the human condition as a kind of universal experience and one where it's very hard for me to impose a kind of nationalist or nationalistic set of parameters around it. And so I'm very, very reluctant, as you can probably tell, to say what Canadian music is. Even to say that Canadian music is diverse, I think it sort of maybe scratches the surface a little bit, but it doesn't go very far. But I do think that there are some specific things, and some of them come out of the fact that, well, Canada, like every country, has its own very particular history, right? And those historical events do percolate into the consciousness of those of us who have lived here and who have absorbed the experience of being here. So, you know, the Japanese-Canadian experience, just to name one example, in World War II, I wrote a ballet called Kimiko's Pearl that was representative of one of the storylines of a family going through that. And that, to me, was a very Canadian work, specifically because it had to do with an experience of community that happened within Canada, that happened really nowhere else. Even in the States, it was quite different. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a roundabout response.
Mm-hmm. No, but it is a unique experience, and it's so different for everybody. So it's difficult, like you said, to have a fully well-rounded way of describing it.
Right.
But how do you hope to see the evolution of, I guess, Canadian contemporary music in the future?
Well, I mean, I think for me, it's again, I would say the best that we can do as composers is to not limit ourselves to the question of what it means to write music as a Canadian, and rather to write music that is as true to your own kind of idiosyncratic makeup as possible, and trust that whatever comes out of that experience, if it's authentic, that is Canadian music. Because implicit within the idea of writing music within Canada is the idea that we can actually express ourselves as authentic individuals. It's a little bit ironic, but I think we have the privilege of being people who can draw from our own voices, and that is not a given in every place, right? So I think that part of the response as Canadian composers is to look at what is meaningful for that person's as an individual, because invariably what's meaningful to that composer, as it is to me, includes the experience of being a Canadian, but is not limited to that experience. And so there are other things as well that come with it. And so I think responding to your own authentic intuition is would be my response to where we can go.
That's amazing. And I guess to wrap things up, do you have any final words of wisdom that you would like to share?
Words of wisdom.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Words of wisdom. Well, I think I will go back to the creative process, because that is sort of the part of the compositional arc that I find very sacred almost. And I think that for composers, and for artists, for people in general, having a part of the creative experience that is joyful, because there's a lot of aspects of creating art that are difficult and challenging. But there's probably some joy there, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. And I think focusing on all we can do to cultivate that element of the creative experience is, beyond significant. I think it's maybe the most important thing that we can do. It's more important than even writing a good piece of music, because ultimately the things that you do in order to make the journey to writing a piece of music that has the effect that you want, that makes your mark as an artist, all of that comes down to process. And if there is joy in the process, then everything else sort of takes care of itself. That's kind of been my philosophy for it. And in times of difficulty, which again I think is a universal experience, that's the part that is worth having as a compass, right? The joy that is inherent in creating, wherever it comes from. I'm not sure where it comes from, but it's important to find ways of cultivating it and protecting it.
Fantastic. Well, that is it for today's episode then. So thank you so much, Kevin, for sharing such beautiful pieces of your art and heart.
Thank you, Brianna. It was a pleasure to speak with you, and thanks for inviting me.
Until next time, folks, keep listening for the Notes of the North.